Hi, everybody, and welcome back once again to the Virtual Roundtable. I'm Jeff Weaver, Training Director for J.J. Taylor Companies, and your host here at the University Virtual Roundtable. Glad to have you with us. We've got a great show today. Very excited. We've got our first special guest sitting here at the roundtable with me. I'll introduce him here to you in just a moment. And then at the end of the hour, before we sign off, we're also going to be concluding our giveaway. As you know, we launched our second podcast this week, the Brew University Book Club. Very excited about that. And as a part of that, we are giving away 5 copies of the season 1 book, Entree Leadership by Dave Ramsey. They're sitting right behind me on the desk. And at the end of the show today, we're going to draw some names, give those away. Very exciting stuff. But before we can get to any of that, we need to get to the good stuff. And that is my special guest. Raised in his family's restaurant business, he's built a strong foundation based on solid work ethic and a great passion for leadership. He's got over 25 years experience in the restaurant, food and beverage, and CPG industry, and that's impressive for a guy that's only 35 years old. He started when he was 10. Don't let him fool you otherwise. He's a really great friend of mine, and with his new venture, Keg Consulting, he is a trusted expert that's helping guide independent businesses and family-owned restaurants through growth and transformation. Please welcome to the roundtable, Mike Bomani. Hi, Mike. How's it going? Welcome to the roundtable.
Hey, Jeff. Going well. Thanks for asking, and thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Glad to have you here. We are going to be talking about the state of the retailer today. As we all know, 2020 has been a crazy year. COVID summer and all these other things going on. A lot of our places around the country seeing on top of that, a lot of big changes in economies, lockdowns, civil unrest. There's just so much happening in the state of the retailer right now, and especially the on-premise retailers and the small family independents. And so as you've been working with a lot of them and helping them try to navigate this new normal, as it were, what are you seeing out there here as we gear up for the fourth quarter?
You know, Jeff, it's been interesting because the common denominator there with all these retailers is in flux. Whether you're an on-premise retailer, an off-premise retailer, a brewery with a tap room, everybody's faced with some dilemmas. If you're in the on-premise, they're not open. They don't know what's going to happen. Or if you look in the cooler climate locations like Minnesota, people are starting to think about what are they going to do once fall hits and, you know, they can't still have a patio. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, we're contending with. The influx in the off-premise is the fact that business has been booming. They can't keep up with demand. The shortages from the suppliers are causing a lot of influx there. And they're also having just a hard time keeping up with their business. Then when you look at the tap rooms, because of what's happening in the industry, the tap rooms are feeling it because a lot of them don't have patios. So, you know, when I say influx, there's just a really big question mark looming over everybody right now. And I think as the numbers, quite frankly, have been very, very good thanks to the off-premise, right? So I just influx is definitely the common denominator with all these retailers.
I think that's been sort of the most interesting aspect of watching this summer transpire is it's sort of a feast or famine, right? For the businesses that were locked down, shut down, or locked out, it's just trying to figure out how are we going to keep the lights on and survive until we can get back. And for the ones who were deemed essential and had to be up and running, it's how do I deal with all these employees who are having to work through a very difficult situation? How do I make sure that I can keep up with all the surge in my business? You know, our Minnesota division started taking a pretty big hit when all this went down because it's a much bigger on-premise market there, as you well know. In Florida, we saw it shift immediately. And when people realized they could drink White Claw at home all day, I guess they decided they would because we've seen a tremendous surge in the off-premise. But yeah, as we're just starting to get bars and restaurants back open. So how are, let's maybe break it down channel by channel for a minute, and we can start in the on-premise, the restaurants and bars. And I know tap rooms sort of fold into that, but, you know, in some areas they were allowed to continue to operate, although very sparse, and some areas they were completely shut down. For the ones that are shut down, what are you hearing as far as likelihood of returning? Do we have an idea of what percentage of businesses are even going to try to reopen? And of the ones that do you want to try and handicap how many might survive 6 or 12 months down the road? Because I think to my mind, one of the challenges is going to be is even if you're legally allowed to open back up, how do you attract customers back into an environment that may feel a little unnerving for people that are worried about their health?
Very, very challenging, Jeff. And I just spoke with somebody from the National Restaurant Association today, and they're expecting a 20% reduction in the number of restaurants, sit-down restaurants, throughout the United States, a 20% reduction. So if you think about that, that's a massive impact. And that's why they're actually going back to try to get more funding and more aid for that industry. I know there's a lot of celebrity chefs out there right now that are doing a lot of lobbying with Congress to really try to get a package put together. Because if you think about it, I mean, so you know how many on-premise retailers J.J. Taylor companies take care of between Minnesota and Florida, and just back out 20% of that. Now, sometimes we might say that's not a bad thing, but at the end of the day, it's going to impact a lot of livelihoods. It really is.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously our gross profit can't complain about it, right? It's fewer stops, it's bigger stops. I mean, we've been trying to do stop count reduction for the past few years, and COVID sort of took that right off there for us. But from a broader perspective, and as you say, you know, for the industry at large, so it's, I guess part of the question there is in that 20%, I mean, do we sort of expect that it'll be the smallest 20% of accounts that were just not set up long term? Or are there some big chains or maybe some badly operated regionals that are also potentially going to be much bigger of a hit if they don't make it through? Have you heard anything in those kind of realms?
Yes, and yes to those. I do think, unfortunately, the small family-owned businesses that might not be as financially healthy as they once were are gonna feel that pain. And you know, a lot of these companies too, a lot of these family-owned businesses, next generation doesn't want to have anything to do with that business. They've seen what their parents went through. Heck, I was third generation in the restaurant business, and it was brutal. And I feel bad for these families today. So I think you're gonna see some attrition there. I think you're gonna see some of these national accounts. I mean, every time you turn around, somebody's filing Chapter 11. You know, whether it's Cheesecake Factory or whoever, and who's not paying their rent. This thing is just going to really be, you know, really trickle down through a lot of channels. And I think that when you put everything together as a whole, it's not going to be isolated to just one specific demographic. It's going to be, you're going to see some major chains pulling out of markets. You're going to see, you know, some regional players really shutting down. And then of course the smaller mom and pop joints, unless you've got a good little burger joint or somewhere that's, you know, a breakfast place, probably not gonna make it.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough. And of course those same people that are working those industries and working those jobs, they're also clients of ours and customers of ours through, you know, other channels and other off-premise. So as people, you know, unemployment has always traditionally had a pretty good tie-in to the beer industry, is my understanding over time and cyclical, you can sort of see. And if these restaurants and chains don't come back, not only are we going to lose the sales through them, but as their people are displaced, we're probably going to see some effects coming through our other channels until that catches up as well, I'd imagine.
Right, because at what point in time does the unemployment package that's out there right now run out? Because they're not going to be able to keep it going the way it's been. And that's why a lot of people have really just kind of said, oh, you know, I'm all right. I'm making as much money now as I was then. But, you know, I also think it's offered some challenges to everybody in the industry, because, okay, if I'm going to reopen, and you said this right from the beginning, a lot of people are hesitant on going to the on-premise because they're hesitant of sitting inside. And if you have a pub that you seat 100 people in, and your state law says you can only have 50% occupancy, well, guess what? You now can only have 50 people in there at a time. However, all of your costs stay the same. The only thing that might go down might be labor, because you might need one or two less servers, right? However, everything else is staying the same. So it
costs the same to own the space. It costs the same to keep the lights on, regardless of how many patrons you're putting through.
Exactly.
So are we then sort of expecting a tail? I mean, I imagine a lot of them really are obviously anxious to get back open. And I'm sure a lot of them took the paycheck protection loans or other business interruption insurances and things that are helping them get across this initial hump. But what kind of time frame do we think might be, you know, expected on, we assuming they want to open when they get a chance to, the lockdowns get released, the government says, okay, now you can reopen. And I know here in Florida, for example, just this week, bars got back to 50%. The question, I guess, is anybody forecasting how long before we'll start to see how they can make it at 50% or what that return sort of looks like? Is it 6 months? Is it 3 months? Is it a year? I mean,
yeah, I think right now everybody, what people are waiting for is, you know, and I've talked to a couple of people about the state of Florida, and they're waiting to see how long it lasts until, hopefully there's not, but until there might be another shutdown, right? Because all you need is for the cases to spike again. And naturally, everywhere you read throughout the country, I don't care if it's the East Coast, West Coast, South, Southwest, it all boils down to the restaurant and bar business that's causing a lot, right? And I think that's really the first concern. And then I think, you know, one of the innovative things that I'm starting to see some of these restaurants doing is they know it's starting to get to be a different time of the year, not just from a weather standpoint, but traditionally. And you and I had this conversation last time I saw you when we were talking about the impact that an election year has on businesses too, right? So, I mean, you know, a lot of people are wrapped up in, okay, there's COVID, there's the civil unrest, and then politics being the way it is. Well, it's not just politics being the way it is right now, it's an election year. And as we had talked about, the impact that it has on the business from the fourth quarter of the previous year through the third quarter of the election year, you know, now compound all that, right? The one thing that I will say is that the innovators in the on-premise, the ones that we just had a wonderful restaurant here that just announced today, they are going carry out only moving forward, which it's great because their food is fantastic. And they know that they're going to do more business that way and keep their kitchen staff busy, as opposed to, you know, betting on the come that people are going to come out and go into their restaurant. It is a small restaurant. So I just don't think that, I don't think you could put a time frame on it, Jeff, to answer your question. I don't think you could put a time frame on it yet because it's still too soon to know.
And that's fair. Obviously, I think, you know, some of it's just speculation, but.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to bet, if I was a betting man, I really think that here in Minnesota, we're going to get to a point to where people don't want to go out here right now. They don't want to go inside. And you know, Florida just reopened, so that's good. People are probably jonesing to get out and really wanting to get out there and you know, go back to the pubs, which to me is great. It's just a matter of how they're operated too.
Gotcha. So you mentioned innovation is going to be one of those things that decides, you know, who sinks and who swims. What are some other, and going to takeout, I think, is certainly an interesting one. You know, I had once theorized back when Uber started really getting popular in Uber Eats and Postmates and all these delivery services. Like, how long is it going to be before a restaurant decides I don't need a front? I can be a kitchen with a windowless, you know, back kitchen and just run my whole restaurant on a takeout business. So there certainly will be some of that. But what are some other innovations that you're seeing? If we're talking as innovation as a lifeline, potentially, what are some things you've seen so far that are being innovative? Because I'm sure a lot of our retailers are looking for those answers from their trusted beer advisor as to what can I do as I get back open and I've got 50% of my bar room back, or I can, you know, maybe open my patio right now. Best practice share is probably pretty useful for our guys to know what's going on. So what have you seen?
One of the things that one of the restaurants has done out here is they are offering like package deals. So if you want to have a nice couple's dinner, right? Let's say you want to have another couple over where you're socially distant, distanced. They will actually, you could do it one of two ways. You could either purchase everything uncooked, from them, and they will supply you with the proper cooking techniques, or they will cook it for you and have it delivered to you. Now, that's a little bit more of an upscale restaurant. Burger joints are a little bit different there. And I think one of the things that the casual dining facilities have been doing is they've been extending the premise of their facility, where they've expanded their seating into their parking lots. And that's not just in Minnesota. I've seen it. I actually drove through four states a month ago to bring my son down to Texas, and it was very interesting seeing the different ways that people were actually trying to accommodate the social distancing, and between setting up some really nice looking pop-up dining rooms in their parking lots. There's been an incredible amount of people that have actually invested in food trucks as of late, that have actually been going out and just doing little social media blasts, where they're come and see Weave's food truck at the corner of 4th and Marquette on Tuesday. That, and those are the types of things that have been using social media as the vehicle to get that message across. And then as far as some of the tap rooms, what's been interesting is they've really upped their game in terms of their service levels. They've upped their game in terms of what they've been offering from a unique brands. And I think that's what's been differentiating it. And the thing that I've really noticed a lot, and I visit at least 10 breweries a week, and I'm in at least 20 off-premise retailers a week, is that the ones that have been very active on their social media pages are the ones that have really been doing extremely well. The ones that have not been staying active, I don't care if it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, whatever it is,
wherever their audience is.
Right. Those are the retailers that are staying very active.
Interesting. Yeah, we've seen it here too. I mean, I know just driving here around town and up and down the state as we have, you see the pop-up tents. You see there was such a premium on picnic tables and umbrellas when they announced that Florida would allow outdoor seating but not indoor, and everybody just whoosh, all of a sudden you saw tents going up in every parking lot, which I think, again, it's great. They're smart. They're being adaptive, and that's good. From a beer perspective, I know Florida, and I think Minnesota may have made some accommodations as well. You can clarify for me. But, I know Florida allowed on-premise retailers to sort of switch over to off-premising in terms of single serve and saying, okay, you can sell beer to go, or you can include beer with your menu, even if it's being picked up and taken, as long as it's sealed. We've not seen, my understanding is in Florida, not a tremendous amount of that. But is that something, is the pickup and go from these, including alcohol, something that a lot of restaurants are interested in? Are they seeing results from it? Is it helping them? Or is it just not something people think about because I've already got that 12-pack at home in the fridge from having gone by the liquor store?
Yeah, it certainly hasn't hurt them. The ones that have been doing it have been putting it front and center. So I've got a restaurant 2 miles from my house. The first thing they hit you with when you open up their website to place the order is you've got a wine list, you've got a beer list, and then they also have cocktail kits. Okay. And then you can make your own old fashioned, you can make your own whiskey sour, you could order all that stuff. And to me, that it may not keep the lights on, but I'll tell you what, it's certainly bringing people, it's keeping them top of mind with people, because it's another add-on that, oh wow, I don't need to go to the liquor store. I can get a bottle of wine over here at the block, right? Or they could sell a six pack of beer. They could sell, the cocktail kits. And I think those types of things have really worked.
Okay. Very good. Anything else before we wrap up the on-premise and move over to the off-premise, anything else in the on-premise space that you're seeing as sort of best practice or great ideas that, again, as our trusted beer advisors are out there talking to people in the market and retailers are reopening and saying to them, I'm looking forward to getting back, but I'm not quite sure how beer fits into the portfolio now, or I'm not really sure how I make this. Anything else you think that would be useful for our people to know and be able to pitch an idea and throw out to them?
Yeah, I think with between the portfolio in Florida and the portfolio in Minnesota, JJ Taylor can be the one-stop shop for a lot of these restaurants and bars. And I mean, I've advised people that have had, you know, 24 draft lines. I would not open up, I would not reopen with 24 draft lines. I would not. I would reopen with 6 or 8. You don't need 24. Go with 6 or 8.
Just the 6 or 8. We sell them.
Exactly. Pick one distributor.
That's smart.
And then just
that's smart. Because we work in quantity discounts. So if you're buying from one distributor, you're probably going to get the best price, the best margin anyway. Your customers certainly are not there looking for variety all night long. I think that's a great point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, those are the, to me, that's just a tremendous upside there. You have one truck, one delivery, one check, and you're done. Because that's the thing is people don't, it's disrupted, right? Everything's disrupted. And let JJ Taylor make it easier for you as your trusted beer advisor to say, you know what? Yeah, you only have to deal with one rep, one driver, and cut one check, and you're done.
I think that's a great message for sure. All right, let's switch over into the off-premise a little bit. And obviously, the off-premise has had a pretty good go of it because, again, unable to drink at the bars, a lot of people switched to drinking at home. And a lot of people figured out that if I'm working from home, I can be sipping a White Claw all day and it's not, you know, a problem. We'll let somebody smarter than us debate the health benefits of all that. Let's talk about our business and say, obviously, the off-premise is booming. We've seen it. We've seen a huge uptick. And again, it's the big retailers, the big boxes, essential retailers. So from a stop count perspective, that's doing well. But clearly there's going to be challenges as the smaller ones come back online and as those big ones are having to operate in this environment. What are you hearing from off-premise retailers that's useful for our guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, this kind of sums it up. I visited an account a few weeks ago and he's like, I could have closed the whole month of July and still have been blowing my 2019 numbers out of the water. And he's a big liquor store, my top 5 liquor stores. That just gives you an indication of what's going on. But I mean, if you look at all the Nielsen data that's out there, there's you know, continuous growth in the beer categories, of course, continuous growth in the seltzers. Now, you know, August leveled off. I shouldn't say leveled off. So I think the trend in August was up 8.4, and I think in July was up 8.4 and August was up 7.4, right? So regardless, it's still going in the right direction. And I think one of the key elements now you're going to be seeing, especially down in Florida, is that, you know, this is really, you know, when you think C-stores are going to start kicking in right now. And there was just Goldman Sachs just did a survey. They surveyed 30,000 convenience stores, which is about 20%. I think that was like 20% of their base. And 65% of those stores are optimistic for the balance of 2020 and 2021 for growth in their businesses. And a lot of them stated that beer is going to be one of those categories that's really going to catapult their business. And I think there's a lot to be said about that. Now, when you look at some of these, the larger format liquor stores, they're doing well because when people are going out shopping, they don't want to leave the house but once.
Right.
So they're stocking up. So they're not buying a bottle of wine, they're buying a case of wine. They're not buying a case of beer, they're buying 5 cases of beer. Right. And now they've got Junior at home, and Junior's like, hey, Pop, why don't you pick me up a case of White Claw while you're out there, or give me a case of Truly or a case of Summit. That's what we're seeing out here. And I think that it's going to be this way for a while. I really do, because people are getting used to it. People are getting used to the curbside service. They're used to going online. Everybody, you know, listen, people complain about technology and you know, being on their phones. I'm seeing parents on their phones more than I'm seeing kids on the phone, because who's ordering food, who's ordering their booze, who's he, right? So you know, every off-premise retailer that I've talked to coast and has just been very, very optimistic. It's definitely been taxing on their teams, because there's, you know, yes, unemployment is up. However, there are people that don't want to go to work, And they you know, in these liquor stores, everywhere you go, they've got signs posted.
So are we seeing a trend towards then? You mentioned sort of people are stocking up. Does that come through in the numbers as far as like bigger packages are selling better? Or is it, you know, how's variety going? Are new products something people are interested in? Or is this kind of just that hunker down for the winter, get what I like, get a lot of it and buckle in?
Some of the retailers are reluctant to bring in new packages and new brands because they don't have time to rearrange the cooler. They don't have time to put it in the system, or they don't, you know, it's just, no, I can't do that right now. But I think, you know, go back to pantry loading, right? And if, guess what, if it's there, you're going to drink it, right? It's like, if you have candy sitting in a dish on your desk, guess what, you're going to eat it. I have beer in my refrigerator, guess what, I'm going to drink it. And I think a lot of what's happening right now is the fact that people are drinking more at home, because, you know, if you look at the elements that really have driven the at-home consumption, you've got a couple of them, right? Obviously, COVID, obviously, the civil unrest. When you look at millennials and Gen Zers, and I am the biggest advocate for both of those generations, just so you know, so I am on your side, any millennials or Gen Zers that are listening, and I think they get a bad rap on everything, including this, because millennials and Gen Zers are just drinking at home and they're spending anyway. That's BS, but I, you know, that's one of the reasons why unemployment is still a factor. And, you know, there are just a few contributing factors of why people are staying at home and buying more and bringing it home and having.
So let's look ahead then a little bit to the fourth quarter here as we gear up, because the holiday season, of course, traditionally a very big time in the beer industry. We expect parties, which, you know, are not going to probably be happening. This is usually the corporate party season, the year end party season. As we know, it's the gift giving season and the philanthropy season where people are going out to their fundraisers and their charity balls. None of that is probably on the menu for most states this year. So there's that part of it, which is a concern. On the flip side, family get-togethers are also a big driver of both on and often off-premise as people are gearing up to host the big Thanksgiving dinner, football parties every weekend. These things are, you know, thank goodness, I think the Big Ten is coming back. My wife is a Badger, so I'm hearing all about how excited they are about it. So, you know, some of that's going to come back, but it's not going to be quite the same. And so as we look ahead to the fourth quarter, what are we hearing and what are retailers gearing up for? What's their expectations as far as, do they think this momentum's going to stay? Do they think it's going to level off? Is it going to be bigger or lower than last year? Where's everybody's head at on this?
The players that I've spoken with think that this is here for a while. Holiday parties aren't going to be out at restaurants and bars. They're not going to be at banquet halls or the country clubs. They're going to be probably at home. Okay. Some people are already saying, I've talked to some companies that have said, yep, we're not having a holiday party this year. What we're doing is we are sending gift cards to all of our employees to be able to use it to go out to dinner and do what they want to do when the time is right, or if they want to go buy groceries and have the party at home. I was telling one brewery about, you know, some of the things that they could do. Order, you know, you go online, go to Legal Seafood, and you could ship somebody a New England lobster dinner. That's all they have to do is open up a can of their favorite beer, pour it in there, and put that thing on the stove, and you've got a wonderful lobster dinner. So I think you're going to see more gifts. And I think that, you know, I mean, I, one guy I spoke with the other day, he's already getting orders for the holiday wine purchases and spirits purchases that this guy gives to his, you know, his employee. So they're gearing up for a big year or a big end of the year. And, you know, because they just think that it's going to be here for a while. I think they're right.
So different, but still happening. Just so it'll shift, but it won't necessarily go away.
Yeah, and that's why I can't emphasize enough to put in my distributor hat on. The execution in the off-premise right now has never been more important, because you have people out there that every time they're walking down an aisle, they have an opportunity to buy something, and right now they're as vulnerable as ever to trying new things. So if you've got a product out there, if you have room on a wing to put 10 cases of something, do it. I don't care if it's in the chip aisle, or the toilet paper aisle, or wherever.
There's nobody in the toilet paper aisle, Mike. We know that. It's although it is free space. Maybe we should just fill it all with beer, because that's, I mean, we're always fighting for space in the off-premise. There it is. It's all just waiting for us. Open shelves.
But yeah, Jeff, I really think that this is the, you know, talk about a time to really shine in the off-premise, man. It's ripe for the taking.
So one question that I'm wondering about as we, again, continue to go forward is, you know, we've dived very big into e-commerce this year here at JJ Taylor. We've named our new e-commerce director, Lisa Velez, and sort of rearranged our inside sales to a centralized point. We're launching our EO Marketplace portal this year in a bigger way than we ever have. You know, we're happy to be getting there. I think there might be a moment here. I feel like maybe there's a moment here where, again, because of social distancing or because of other concerns, maybe retailers are most open to this type of thing. What are you hearing from retailers around the need, the want for e-commerce? How do we sell that in? Because I think, again, we're making the offerings available at exactly the right moment now, it seems, but how do we make sure that this takes root and is there not just for now, but for a while?
You know, Look at how e-commerce has evolved. I mean, I remember when we first, you know, back in the early 2000s, when we first really started it, it was like, I mean, it felt like a punching bag from people just constantly ticked off at you. And now, listen, takes a global pandemic for people to understand that there's a benefit to it, right? It's unfortunate that it has to happen this way, but I think e-commerce is going to be more important now than it ever has been, and you're going to see more people accepting it, because I'm witnessing it too with people that I've talked to, and they're just like, I would much rather have you call me and tell me, okay, here's what I have on hand, here's how much I need, take the order and we're done, or let me go online and place the order myself. I'd rather do that. I'd rather that way I could control it. You just tell me what your price breaks are. I've got the part. Let me go online and place my own orders, because I think that these stores are growing, getting bigger and bigger. Now that might not hold true for supermarket channel or the club stores, but I certainly think that for the lion's share of the off-premise accounts, I really think that e-commerce is going to be a real solid asset and tool for JJ Taylor to have.
Well, good, because we're there. we made it at just the right time. We arrived at our moment.
Well, you know, you guys have always been on that front end of everything. Like Hank always says, we want to be on the leading edge, not the bleeding edge, right? And Taylor has always been that company that has been willing to stick their neck out there and be the first to go out and do something. And, you know, there's always been the due diligence that's been put into it, and the fact that they're not afraid to take those steps, that to me speaks volumes. And it's interesting to hear your competitors, both in Florida and up in Minnesota, talk about it, because while they've always criticized, I think once you get a different viewpoint like I have it, it's like, man, you guys really do a lot of good things over there.
Oh, we try. We got plenty to keep us busy, that's for sure. You know, for us, it's always about, it comes back to being that trusted beer advisor, right? That's our motto. That's our mission when it comes to our customers. In times like this, I think that philosophy is probably more important than ever, but it's also about the details. So from your perspective, and again, from maybe, you know, having talked to and spent more time with these retailers and knowing, what more than, you know, what are some of the, if you had to narrow it down to just a handful of big ideas, what are retailers really hoping to see from us to be that trusted beer advisor in this moment and in this environment?
Yeah, I think communication is first and foremost, especially if you are in the situation that, well, given the situation that you're in right now with the supply chain being as hammered as it has been, continuing to keep that line of communication open, because while that retailer might be upset with you as a salesperson, they're going to be more upset if you don't tell them. Okay, they may be ticked. Not you. First of all, it's not you. They're ticked off at. It's something wrong. They're going to take it out on you. But the communication is paramount to, you know, make sure that they know good, you know, the one thing John Taylor always told me, good news, bad news, give it to me right away. I don't want to wait. Find out and talk to them. So communication, the relationship, you know, making sure that every time you talk to your retailer or your partner there, you know, ask how they're doing. Don't, and these things, I'm not telling you guys something you don't already know, right? It's just, these are the things right now that are important to people. Stocking the shelves, making sure that they see you doing those types of things, because, you know, a lot of times these retailers have minds like steel trap. And if you do something for them, they'll remember. Some of them may forget, but they will remember, and they will take care of you. And the other piece of that too is, if you don't do the things that you should, they won't ever forget that. And I think being able to bring them opportunities opportunities and ideas to help them, because a lot of these places are, you know, they're spent on space. So if you could be creative and how to fit that 10-pound ham in that 5-pound can, that's a big role. Don't be an order taker. There are enough order takers out there. You know, if you want to be an order taker, then, you know, you're probably not in the right line of work.
No, because I could take an order online.
Yeah, right. If you want to be a trusted advisor, there's two very important words. Trust, first of all, which is earned, right? Advisor is somebody that provides solutions, right? Make sure that when you're there, you're providing a solution for an issue or a pain point that they may have. And if anybody knows the pain points that your retailers have, it's you, the sales. When you identify a pain point for a retailer, that helps them, because they know that they have pain points. But when you identify the pain point and bring them that solution, that's what makes a difference.
Couldn't agree with you more. It's, you know, like you said, if it's all about taking an order, I can get an interface to take an order. But what makes our people different and what makes them indispensable is the advice and the trust that they're able to build. So I think that's spot on, and I appreciate you saying it for us, because it's always good to remind ourselves of exactly where it is we fit in this world and how important it is. I'm going to pause here for a second and take any questions we have. Joanne, come on through, and you're at the roundtable with Mike Bomani. What do you want to know?
Hi, I just want to get your opinion on draft. Looking into the future with on-premise, do you see a chance of draft bouncing back, or do you think we're just going to continue to decline and accounts are going to go to draft or go to package only?
That's a great question, Joanne. And I think for the foreseeable future, you're going to see a very limited draft lineup. I really do. And I think they may expand their package lineup to help offer that variety that they've had on draft. I do believe draft will come back. I don't think it's going to go away, but I think it'll come back. My instinct tells me probably late 2021, depending on how everything else goes in the as the people come back.
Probably going to have a lot to do with when people feel comfortable getting back out to the bar for long stretches.
Oh yeah, and I'll tell you, with regards to Joanne's keg question, one of the things that I'm noticing is that the on-premise establishments that I've seen that are open, some of them are getting away from glassware and going to plastic.
Interesting. I had not thought about it, but you know, that makes complete sense. Obviously, from a hygiene perspective, customer confidence perspective, et cetera. But I had not even considered that, because I haven't been out to very many bars, obviously, in all this, but that's a really great insight.
And the ones that have the glass washers, those are the ones that are still using glass pints. I've been to half a dozen that are using plastic cups.
They still want coasters though, right?
And they want the cups.
Yeah, exactly. They always want the coasters, and now they want the cups to boot. Joanne, that was a great question. Thank you for asking it. I think that's a really great set of insights, and Mike, thanks for your answer.
I think it's been really interesting, Jeff, that as I in my travels, everybody's trying to figure out what that new normal is going to be, and you know, normal is what everybody else does. It's the how can you be different than everybody else to be able, you know, what's you know, you look at like Blue Ocean, what can we do to be different than our competitor without it being price driven, right? That's when you start commoditizing things, you're just another product, you're just another distributor. But when you're adding value, legally adding value, I say that, you know, I'm not talking about putting dollars in people's pockets. I'm talking about legally adding value to somebody's business as an advisor. That cuts through the clutter. And I, you know, I mean, I'm seeing that. I've got a client actually in the conservation solutions business. So they do LED lighting and solar. And it's very fascinating that as the industry, at least out here, the industry goes, there's nobody doing what this company is doing in terms of how they're presenting the payback and what that means. And I relate it to the beer industry, because if you're walking in to sell a display or you're walking in to sell an ad feature, you know, everybody wants to know how much money they're going to make and how long it's going to take to get, right? And again, I'm probably not telling you anything you don't already know, but if there's newer reps out there, that's important to know.
Yeah. No, if you don't have a plan for the ROI, if you can't explain the idea, and if you can't explain it simply in a way that they can digest, you're not ready to walk in there and make a real pitch. And that's part of that preparation, of course, that we encourage all our reps to do when they make their plan for the day. But I think you're exactly right, Mike. It's about differentiating. It's about providing value that is not just dollars and cents value. It's about offering them something they're not seeing, because that's taking you out of the realm of order taker who comes in, says, what do you want, versus someone who comes in with an idea that's there to help and grow their business. So I totally agree. And I think too, one of the things we're talking about here in Jupiter and around the company and a lot in my world right now is one of the hardest things in life to accomplish is change. And the reason is because you need a catalyst. You need a reason to change. Well, we've been in a weird way blessed with this thing that is forcing everyone to rethink everything, right? Right now, the rules are out the window. This is the time where everyone accepts that there's going to be change, and whatever normal becomes, it won't necessarily be what normal was. Don't waste that catalyst for change by not coming out better on the other side. We want to not just rebound, but we want to rebound stronger than we have been, because that is a great opportunity of change that people are going to accept the idea of this is how we do it now. If you waste that moment by going back to the way things were, I think we've blown a huge opportunity. And that's why with training, we've decided, you know, well, look, the classroom's on hold. I didn't kill the classroom. COVID didn't kill the classroom. It put it on pause. But instead, now we're here and we're able to do this and have, you know, you come and join us and do different things. And we're going to continue to push in areas. And when we go back to the classroom, which we will, this isn't going to get to go away either. We're going to have new ideas and new methods and new things. Just because we've launched e-commerce doesn't mean we're going to stop going into accounts. It means what we do in those accounts might be different or better, because we don't have to spend our time taking the order. We can spend our time selling an idea and let the order go through the website. There are so many ways to come out of this better than we have, because change, the hardest part of change is usually that catalyst. And here we have ourselves a catalyst that everybody has agreed, this is it, we're changing. I feel like it's one of those moments where you have to just look at everyone and say, don't blow this opportunity to do better, be better, and come out the other side better than we went into it. Cause it's going to be different, but it doesn't have to be worse.
Absolutely. And what, you know, the thing one of the things I've taken away from this whole pandemic is normal's boring, you know?
Well, look who you're talking to. I couldn't agree with that anymore.
But I mean, it's like, you know, if you just look at the people that have been able to adapt are the ones that are making it. And the ones that have been sitting on their hands waiting for somebody to bring them that magic bullet, they're not going to be around. And it's unfortunate, because there are a lot of good places that are not going to be around because of that. And it's sad, but it's just like, you know, trying to get people to understand that is very, very, you know, it's hard being the crusader to go out and try to get that done. You know? And I'd rather people just at least open up to ideas and trying to do something different. Because if you don't change, and you don't change just for the sake of change's sake, you change because we live in a complete evolution. And again, using the Hankism, you know, be on the leading edge. Be ahead of it.
Absolutely. All right, I'll pause for a second. Final questions. Anybody else want to pick the brain of Mike Bomani, the CEO of Keg Consulting, and our guest today here as we wrap up?
I have a question. Anybody else drinking beer?
Oh, good question. They're not on, a lot of them are in their cameras, so I can't see. But if you're drinking something and you want to tell us what it is, what you got? Saga? Oh, yeah. I don't get my summits anymore down here because you know, somebody pulled them out of Florida back in the day. I don't know what the hell happened, but but now they're, you know, I gotta go to Minnesota to get a summit now, but. All right. Well, Mike, let me thank you real quick for being here. This has been an absolutely fantastic conversation. I appreciate taking out the time. I think part of the fun of this new format for us is the ability to invite someone like yourself who really knows the industry and can give us that outside perspective and that different perspective. So I really appreciate you giving us the hour to talk this stuff through and keeping us on our toes and making sure that we are living up to our trusted beer advisor promise. Really appreciate you coming in today.
Jeff, thanks for having me, and team, thanks for having me. And please share my contact information, Jeff, if anybody wants to get
Mike,
shoot me an email.
Real quick, please. Where can everybody find you? I know you're doing a lot these days, but where can people find you if they want to see what you're up to?
So my website is www.kegconsult.com. Please feel free to look me up on LinkedIn and connect with me on LinkedIn. Email address is mike@kegconsult.com.
You're also a YouTube star now, I hear, right?
Ah, well, I wouldn't say star, maybe start up.
Okay. that's perfect, yes. But yeah, you've got a YouTube channel now. You're going to be doing videos, again, with people inside the industry. So if you liked what Mike had to say and want to hear more about his perspectives on retail and the restaurant industry and the distribution industry and the hospitality industries, check him out through his site, kegconsult.com. Check out the YouTube channel and see the videos they're doing. You guys are doing some great stuff, and I'm excited to have you. You never know who will pop up on those things, so it's always a good idea to be subscribed and see what's coming. So, all right, Mike, well, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, and I will catch up with you again soon. Next time one of us gets to the other one's direction, I'm sure we'll find time for a beer and a cigar.
My pleasure. Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Jeff. Appreciate it.
So that's all for this week. Thank you guys very much for joining us. So thrilled to have had you here. We'll catch you again next time on the Brew University Virtual Roundtable. Until then.